Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, the preservation, and the presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So today's talk is on dependent origination and how ignorance of Four Noble Truths conditions the mind towards continuing the process that is stated in dependent origination that leads to greed aversion and ongoing deluded thinking. I linked to the article on the website. It's a rather lengthy article. It's all commentary. Most of the teachings and most of my writings are, I also cite and describe a sutta directly. In this case and in Tuesday's case, they're all commentary on dependent origination. And so I'm not going to read the article. That would be kind of like commenting on my commentary. And as simply as I possibly can, describe this basic process. This is what we need to understand as the cause of all of our own contributions to stress and suffering. We learned from the Salatha Sutta just a few weeks ago that there's this stress and suffering that's inherent as a consequence of having a human life. The Buddha describes that very simply as birth, sickness, aging, and death, not getting what is desired, receiving what is undesired. And then he would always describe that as saying, in short, the five clinging aggregates are stress and suffering, are dukkha. And so the last 2 weeks, we looked at the how suffering arises through ignorance directly to this thing called the five clinging aggregates, also known as anatta or the not-self characteristic, excuse me. And then last week we looked at and learned from the Dhatuvabhanga Sutta exactly how the Buddha described a human being. Every human being is composed of six properties and nothing more. A great part of that Dhatuvabhanga Sutta is the Buddha repeatedly saying, don't create a speculative, imaginary existence for yourself, because that's where stress and suffering arises. And we do that through something called conditioning our minds towards that way of thinking. So excuse me for a moment. Dependent origination is what the Buddha awakened to. And it's the most fabricated teaching that is present in modern Buddhism. I'm not putting down modern Buddhism. That's just the way it is. If you do a search on dependent origination or all its modern variants, such as interdependent co-arising, interconnectedness, interbeing, and if you look at those words, they simply do not relate at all to dependent. They're two different words, two different meanings, and two different results from that thinking. So the Buddha awakened to this never before understood idea that the reason that human beings create all or contribute to their stress and suffering on an ongoing basis is because of ignorance, but a very specific ignorance, ignorance of Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths simply state that as a consequence of having a human life, there will be stress and suffering. It's unavoidable. One should not lose their mind over even trying to do so. That's the first noble truth. The second noble truth relates to that. The craving for and clinging to things to be different than they are, meaning the stress and suffering inherent in life to be different than it is the origination of all of the following greed aversion and deluded thinking. So it's from that one thought that things should be different for me, taking life personally and insisting that because of me in the world itself should be different. Of course, that is the most self-centered, self-referential view anybody can have. But we all have that when our minds are rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. It manifests in an infinite number of ways in people, sometimes as a kind of a quiet rejection of life. The hermit might be a good example of that. Or sometimes it erupts in the violence that we're seeing today. But it always maintains a level of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking in each and every human being, simply because where there's ignorance, there will be those characteristics. Those are unavoidable. That's another aspect of being a human being. as a human being, if I don't understand what's occurring right now, my mind has to react to it, doesn't it? But from understanding what is occurring right now, as a human being, my mind remains calm and at peace. Why? Not through magic, not through speculation, not through escape, not through projecting myself into something I can't be, simply by gentle understanding that this is what's occurring. This is what it means to be a human being. And so as a consequence of not knowing that, as a consequence of ignorance of Four Noble Truths, dependent origination states, the Buddha states, that we create fabrications. In the sutta, it says, from ignorance of Four Noble Truths, as a requisite condition comes fabrications. Fabrications is an all-encompassing term. It means that from that point of ignorance, everything that we do and see ourselves in relation to is fabricated. Why is it fabricated? It's fabricated because we're basing that view on information that is itself conditioned. Any view that is rooted in ignorance is conditioned towards ignoring that ignorance. It's the nature of ignorance. And so human beings create very powerful but very subtle strategies to maintain that ignorance, to enable them to not recognize that we're doing this to ourselves. That's what the Buddha spent 6 years of his life ardently and directly seeking, and that's what he found out, why we do it to ourselves. And so the process of undoing that is also found in dependent origination. If we can condition our minds through ignorance, then the way to decondition our minds would be through wisdom, wouldn't it be? But even that is a bit ineffable, hard to describe, unless we have a framework to describe it. In other words, a mind that is prone to grasping after what will maintain ignorance will create scenarios where it appears to be developing wisdom of what it means to be a human being, when in fact that pursuit is a pursuit that is merely a distraction. And that's not to put down the great philosophical quest that we've been on since the beginning of humankind that has led to a measure of understanding. But none of the great thinkers of our time, and I know it's a controversial statement, but none of the great thinkers that we all know of and some of the great thinkers that we've never heard of have discovered what the greatest thinker of all time did. Siddhartha Gautama figured it all out. And he figured it out. His understanding does not resolve in a speculative exposition of what one would hope would be a description of humanity, which is what philosophy provides. It's useful in this world, but it can also be a distraction. The Buddha did not describe anything in philosophical or speculative manner, as evidenced by last week's sutta and many other suttas. He taught that every aspect of humanity, of having a human life, can be and must be directly experienced. In other words, for me to create a future-based scenario or a speculative umbrella about what it is to be a human being without the direct experience of what it is to be a human being is just creating another condition. It might be a beautiful condition. It might be a very compassionate concept of what it means to be a human being. But nothing describes what it means to be a human being as effectively, directly, and profoundly as understanding Four Noble Truths. So as a consequence of not knowing that, we do create very very compassionate aspects of humanity that we hope to accomplish and live in. But we also, in that same mind that is prone to compassion, let me backtrack a little bit, I believe that every human being, except those that have true psychotic difficulties, and that's a true psychosis is very, very extremely rare in the human population, but it does exist. And so I'm just using that to qualify this statement. Every other human being has great compassion for other human beings. It's impossible to be a human being and not have that. The problem is, and it's one of the things that leads to an individual's greatest stressor, is because of ignorance, at times, but ongoing throughout our lives, we hurt other people mostly inadvertently. And we also hurt ourselves in mostly inadvertently, but sometimes directly. But we do it out of ignorance. And because it's done out of ignorance, excuse me. And math is very dry today. I don't want to explain why, but I guess I should. I'm using new denture cream and it's drying out my mouth. So there. Impermanence, all right? Excuse me. So from that lack of understanding and the stress that we cause ourselves by these seemingly minor and even unnoticed harms towards others and towards ourselves rooted in ignorance, that is the most conditioning aspect of life. In other words, we find that we have inadvertently harmed ourselves and we don't know why, or we've caused a harm or an upset to another human being and we know it wasn't our intention. But that also leads to how can I not do it again? And if we don't understand how we're not going to do it again, we're always concerned about doing it again. And we start creating escapes for that way of thinking about ourselves. I think the most debilitating thought, and it's prevalent worldwide, is that because I feel that I don't have complete control of myself, there's something wrong. It's known as self-loathing. It's the essence of the manifestation of the first noble truth leading to craving for, excuse me. So because of that misunderstanding of who I am, and the fact that I don't seem capable of directly providing a reasonable safety and security and satisfaction for my life, in this moment, I grasp for something that I'm not. I grasp for resolution, for my own failings that I apply to myself in a personal way, meaning that because I've done something that was incorrect in the world or harmful in the world, there's something wrong with me. There's something lacking in me. And that's reinforced, by the way, in many of our systems, that in order to fix myself, in order to better myself, I first have to find out what's wrong with me, beat myself up over that, over the fact that there's something wrong. I might even feel that I have to do some penance or some other aspect of a ritual because there's something wrong with me in order to fix it, rather than what the Buddha understood, to simply understand. Because every time I take an action, even if it's in a very subtle subconscious way, Tim in the class brought this up, even if it's subconscious, the act of following through continues to condition my mind towards that ignorance. Every time I look out of myself and my own right view, I'm conditioning myself to continue the establishment rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. I'm conditioning myself to continue the conditioning found in dependent origination. And until I'm able to recognize that I've done it, I can't undo it. It's not something that can be resolved through grace, through outside intervention, through endless prayer or endless bowing, endless rituals, endless visualizations, endless positive thinking. One of the most pernicious harms that brought to human beings is the belief that I can positively think myself out of negative thinking. Doesn't make sense, does it? Simply by understanding who and what I am in relation to the world on a moment-by-moment basis, that's another way of saying practice wise restraint, framed by the Eightfold Path, in this moment, in my life as life occurs, begins the process of recognizing and deconditioning conditioned thinking. So dependent origination describes how a mind becomes conditioned towards maintaining ignorance, and the Eightfold Path provides the means and the direct and effective method of recognizing and undoing the ignorance that leads to that conditioned thinking. And I want to leave it right there because that makes the point. It's our Eightfold Path that does it. There's quite a bit more in the article. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to please read it. But I think that covers the entire article. And I really wanted to leave on that part. Ignorance leads to stress and suffering. The Eightfold Path is the path of developing wisdom where there was once ignorance. So, thank you for listening. today's class. And I think I'll go online and go around and start right here. Anthony, how are you?
Unmute my mic.
There you are.
It's really great to be back.
Good to have you back.
I wish I was there, but that's not possible. Anyway, thanks for the talk. I did read it. It's wonderful, and it's so appropriate for where Debbie and I are at this point in time. You know,
tell us why. Everybody doesn't know you just moved. So.
Yeah, I mean, just selling off, giving away, throwing out 90% of your possessions, you know, moving, changing careers, abandoning every ritual and system that used to work, and then, you know, trying to go through setting things up. And we're living here in a small one-bedroom place until our place becomes available, because it all got delayed by coronavirus. So we're like amidst these piles and piles of suitcases and boxes. And there have been like so many moments where I was clinging for the past and thinking, you know, this is crazy. I miss our home. I miss our friends. But then I look at like what can be, and I realize that the best way to approach it is just to be present and communicate with one another. And I've been reading a lot of books by Pema, because I think she's amazing, Pema Chodron, and reading your studies and keeping up the meditation practice. And you realize that, you know, you just have to keep going forward, because things are in transition, seem very difficult. Yeah. But I've never made a change in my life that I didn't look back and say, I think that was a good idea. You know, and even if it isn't initially, it eventually becomes one.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of great that's going to come out of this, but, you know, to circle back to the point, leading a very conditioned life is very challenging.
Yeah.
And, but also hopeful. I mean, you know, it's bittersweet, I guess.
Yeah. Anthony, you came to the Sangha about 5 or 6 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And the change in you and your presence is just remarkable. And I think, at least to a small extent, your coming to the Dhamma really changed the direction of your life. Isn't that true?
100%.
Yeah. And so now you're...
I mean, this was a big, huge piece of it, and very important piece, and I hope to continue it even online.
Well, I'm sure you will, your future is going to be incredibly meaningful and remarkable. So I hope we continue to hear from you, and please tell Debbie, I'd say hello, and maybe she'll join us sometime.
Yeah.
Good.
I think maybe I'll be able to pull her out to a retreat. And I definitely want to come back for retreats. I miss everybody, and I wish I had a chance to say a proper goodbye, but, you know, that's another casualty of the coronavirus.
Well, you don't have to say goodbye, because you're still with us, and the information on the retreat is on the website, so it's coming up. It's not that far away either, so I'm glad you joined us this morning.
I'll be here before you know it.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you, Anthony. It's good to see you. Please keep joining us.
Good to see you, too.
That looks like Mary. Mary, how are you?
Hi, John. Hi, everybody. And congratulations, Anthony.
Thank you.
I think I've been doing this for 3 years, and you have been on quite a journey. And so congratulations. You just continue to head toward a more peaceful life. So that's great. So congrats.
Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, hopefully we do see you at a retreat. That would be great.
I'm sure you will, because I miss you guys so much, and I want to see everybody. So I'll make it a point.
That's great. Great. So, John, I was thinking about last week, and then listening to this today, is sometimes I think we can get lost in I mean, dependent origination is a heavy one, right? That's mm-hmm. that, you know, first time most of us hear it, we're like, you know, trying to unwrap this huge, heavy thing. And I think sometimes we can get off track if we get so situational. It ties so nicely with the Eightfold Path. It's consistent with the aggregates, you name it. It's consistent with everything else we're unraveling. And I think if we look too deeply at it, or if we take each situation, well, here's how I'm feeling now, or this is what just happened to me now. The reason why I say that is because I remember when I first coming to the class, if we got too caught up in telling our story about what happened this week, right? Hey, John, I want you to know what happened this week, and here's how I applied my Dhamma, or here's how I didn't, or whatever. I mean, it certainly helped you understand where our heads were at, but the story wasn't necessary. And I think as you came to class, you realized you just needed to start with the Dhamma. You know, something happened to me this week, my feelings arose, you know, whatever you're describing that got you disconnected from the Dhamma is all that's necessary. Because even like some of the examples last week, you know, whether it's something small that just happened to me or the big things in life that are happening out on the streets or coronavirus or whatever, yeah. It's all the same explanation, you know? And I think we can get caught in our, whether it's self-loathing or self-analysis or, you know, it's just natural to be hard on ourselves, I think, in our culture. And then we make the Dhamma more complicated than it needs to be. And it really, and not to oversimplify the problems in the world, but the solution, and the application of the Dhamma is consistent.
Yes.
And I think that's so helpful and so grounding to no matter what's happening in your life and like, how did I get here? And, you know, all those extreme moments that we've all experienced more than once, that it's the same solution.
Yep.
I think. So that's my appreciation for the dependent origination, because if I think about it too much, it's like my head explodes. I think you really have to stay grounded in everything that it's connected to and what it's trying to say. Yeah. Wow.
Well said, Mary. Thank you. The nature of suffering and the five clinging aggregates describe it so well, because it's the nature of the five clinging aggregates to cling to other five clinging aggregates. And so the nature of suffering becomes intertwined throughout society. The fabric of society is intertwined through suffering. And so it does seem like it's very, very complicated, because it appears everywhere and it appears in so many different ways. But you're so right, Mary. The result, and that's why the Salatha Sutta is such a significant sutta, the common stressors of life we can do nothing about, but we can do something about our reaction, sticking that second arrow in. And it's through understanding that the common occurrences of stress and suffering are just that. They're common to everyone. Nothing has to be taken personally. And so we develop that understanding. The simplicity of this is just that. It's understanding and abandoning ignorance wherever it arises. And through the simple explanation of dependent origination, we can get directly to what we need to do. The simple explanation is, from ignorance of Four Noble Truths, all manner of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking arises. So it points directly to, okay, let me understand Four Noble Truths. How do I do it? Through an Eightfold Path. And it is that simple, you know, but it is also up to each individual to do that. Yeah. And again, dependent origination, where does ignorance reside? Ignorance, I may like to think that, well, there's an example of ignorance, there's another one. There's all kinds of examples of ignorance out there. But the only ignorance that I can change is my own. That's where the Dhamma is applied, in each and every individual human being. Thank you, Mary. Becky, how are you this morning?
Hi, everyone. Hi, John. I'm
good
fine.
To see you.
I really loved what Mary just said.
Me too.
And she's absolutely right, because many of the concepts of the Dhamma, when you first learn of them, are difficult to wrap your head around. And it takes time to really understand what the Buddha was talking about.
Yeah.
So in your everyday life, you can't go around thinking, well, was that dependent origination? Was that clinging and craving? What I did just now, that was a bad reaction. I feel terrible. You just have to keep the Dhamma with you in some way. And that is just a focus.
That's refined mindfulness. Excuse me for interrupting.
A single thing that the Dhamma can do for you. It's like, for me, it's like, look out, don't take it personally, and go on.
Yep.
That's what works for me.
That's the Dhamma.
And you do that, you can do that in a moment-to-moment way. Well, not, or at least you can do that several times throughout your day.
Yeah.
But it's still very difficult. You have to have, you still have to have a lot of concentration to do it.
Good point.
And I thought that if I do not meditate for a couple of days, I will go through the day and I'll just be like, wow, what the heck happened? I am definitely not on the path today. And it's just it's a practice. That's what it is.
That's it.
And I'm glad to be reminded of it every week and to be here, because it's easy to get distracted.
It is.
So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Tim, how are you?
Morning, everybody.
Good morning, Tim.
Mary, I like the part that you talked about the story. I wrote down that dependent origination is the story that we tell ourselves within the conscious realm. The story that we tell ourselves every day, every moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think dependent origination resides in that. And I wrote down a metaphor to articulate my idea of dependent origination. And it's interesting how every time I read and look at dependent origination, I get something else out of it.
Yeah.
And the metaphor is this. It may be incorrect, but I like it. Like a basement flooding from a leaky pipe. Bailing out the water may temporarily keep the flooding at bay, but eventually the basement will flood. In order to stop the flooding, you must find the leak and seal it. Furthermore, you must figure out why the leak occurred to prevent the leak from happening again. And that is that anatta, those three elements of anatta, the conscious and the unconscious and the subconscious, and that point of becoming, looping back to mental formation, that bailing out the water, that rebirth. I kind of feel that the Eightfold Path is that conscious controllability, the controlling elements of living a peaceful life, the things that you can, we have the power introspectively within the Eightfold Path to have right view, to sit down and to practice jhana and to refine our mindfulness and to be virtuous. And I have more here, but I think I'm going to stop there because it's emotional. Because it's I think that there are certain personality traits from our past that set up that delusional wall to understand dependent origination. I'm one of them. And when there's a breakthrough, it's very liberating.
Yeah.
Very liberating to get that profound understanding, even if it's temporary. And that's why I keep notes, because I go back to them and I bring back that idea so I can break through that shroud of delusion that's been conditioned in my mind. So thank you, Mary, for using that word, story, because that was key.
Tim, that was excellent. Thank you so much. The metaphor of you have to fix the leak relates directly to jhana meditation, isn't it? Because the leak is a distracted mind. It's always leaking out. There's no containment of reality in that mind, is it? It's just perfect. Thank you. Who's up there? Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hello. Good morning, everybody.
Good to see you.
Good to be here, as always, and just soaking it all in, not just the sun, but soaking in all the wisdom of the group, and just grateful to be here. That's really all I have. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Karen. Julia, how are you?
Hello, everybody. Hello, John.
Good morning.
The first time I heard dependent origination, it was very, I was very overwhelmed, but, slowly but surely, I feel like I understand it better and better. I feel like, it's how we interact with life and, yeah. on a continuous basis all the time, every day, every second. And it's extremely important. It's one of the things that you really have to understand because it is the Dharma. This is the Dharma right here. Yeah. So to understand this is actually to finally stop yourself from continuing being ignorant. And so it's a very important concept to finally conquer. I feel like the first four links of dependent origination, ignorance, fabrication, consciousness, name and form, those are like automatic. It's almost like it's already part of you. And the only way those four can be dissolved and done is through deep jhana meditation. Really, because and the more you meditate, the less ignorant you become, the less you fabricate. But it's such a slow process. So we're constantly taking that with us whenever we experience life. It's kind of like our window, you know, of how we see life, which is difficult.
Yeah.
So the only place that we really can control anything is through point of contact, and that's when we have the ultimate control, where we can practice wise restraint and finally stop. Like when a feeling arises, finally recognize it and stop yourself from clinging and craving. Well, at least that's what I do anyway.
Yes.
As things come into my life, I try to stop it at that point when it reaches contact. It's very difficult sometimes to restrain yourself. You start to realize that you're going through a feeling and then you're like, oh boy, here I go again. I'm going on that roller coaster ride. I have to stop it, you know? So that's where I find that, where we have the most control. Otherwise, we will continue going on to further become ignorant. So,
yes.
But I think I understand it somewhat, but it's still a process for me.
You thank you, Julia. You understand it very well. And we say it all the time here. The Buddha reiterates it constantly. Is the Dhamma is practiced right here, right now, at the point of contact. And if you think about what we're talking about today, dependent origination manifests now. It doesn't manifest yesterday or tomorrow. It describes the process of what's occurring right here, right now. Whether I'm a Dhamma practitioner or not, whether I know Four Noble Truths or I know something else, life is occurring right here, right now, and it always has to. And so the simplicity of the Dhamma is just in that. The Four Foundations of Mindfulness points out to what we do in jhana meditation is what we carry into our moment-by-moment life, being mindful of the breath and the body, and that as feelings and thoughts arise and pass away, we no longer let them distract us. That's Dhamma practice. It's changing that wrong view that's maintained from ignorance right here, right now, into right view. And if you think about it, you said something that was really profound, Julia, that and these weren't your exact words, but your inference was that everything that we've ever been conditioned by is manifesting right here, right now, in this moment. That's true karma. That's the true understanding of karma. But it doesn't mean that we have to analyze everything, and that's the reason why. Because everything I've ever thought or acquired as me, as thought that I am or needed to be to live in the world, is expressing itself right now in the way I'm thinking, the way I'm acting, the way I'm and reacting. And so even if you take that and extrapolate it into some of the common beliefs of humanity, including so-called religious or spiritual beliefs, that we live endless lives. One of the tenets of Mahayana Buddhism is that the soul, the Buddha, there is no such thing as a soul, but I'm just using this as an example, transmigrates from one life to one life to another life endlessly until that soul somehow awakens. That's, again, that's not Buddhist teachings. But even if you believe that fabrication, all of those lives are manifesting right here, right now. So again, you can fit that fabrication into even this. It's right here, it's right now. Dependent origination is conditioning my mind right here and right now, or the Eightfold Path is deconditioning my mind right here and right now. That's the only choice we have as Dhamma practitioners. Thank you, Julia. Michael, how are you?
Oh, hi, John. Hi, everybody. I'm asleep at the wheel again. Right? Tim, first thing I would do is, instead of bailing out that water, I would call a plumber.
And who's the plumber? Siddhartha Gautama.
Where am I now? I'm all over the place. I think perspective is important when it comes to looking at or understanding the Dhamma. John, you had mentioned in one of your previous introductions and commentary that, like, as a consequence of our existence, we're born into ignorance. And that kind of resonated, you know, within me when you had said that. So right now we know where we are. So what are we going to do from this point on, you know? And dependent, you know, Julie and I, like, we try to be aware of the feelings that arise and throughout the day, or the things we incur throughout our days. And again, like, to develop that right view, you know, through refined mindfulness and holding the Eightfold Path in mind. And that's something I try to do. I try to operate from there, or be aware of what's going on, and then, like, introspectively, and I try to process, you know, a response that's aligned with the Eightfold Path. So that's the way I try to go through my day, and knowing that is the way to you know, to clarity, you know, and sure. And for and to improve your quality of mind.
Yes,
because feelings do come and they go, and it's, you have to, or I have to understand they're, you know, where they come from. Many times, obviously, conditioned thinking, which is a hard thing to break down. It's a real hard thing to break down, your conditioned thinking, and by no means is it a simple process. So, again, it comes down to the Eightfold Path and sticking to it, and that's what we try to do. And that's basically all I have on that day.
So. Thank you, Michael. It was brilliant. The all the difficulties I've created for myself in my entire life, and I think this is true for every human being, is based on how I was feeling or how I was thinking about how I was feeling. It caused me to react. And the Buddha's Dhamma, immediately on the inception of practicing the Dhamma, the Buddha's Dhamma addresses just that problem through the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. We learn to depersonalize what we've always taken as me, my feelings and my thoughts about my feelings. And in that way, we gain true serenity, a true calm and peaceful mind that is incapable of harm, of introducing any harm in the world. It just can't do it. And the picture of that is a picture of the Buddha, isn't it? That's what we, when we look at any depiction of the Buddha, That's really what it brings to mind, isn't it? Someone who has overcome the reaction to feelings and thoughts. Sitting calm and peaceful. That's it. Thank you. Ram, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, I remember when I first started studying the Dhamma, I started with dependent origination. Because it was the kind of theory that I was looking for. And at that time, it was just that. It was theory. I was kind of plodding my way through it numerous times. But slowly over the years, it's become much more of a practical application.
Yeah.
It's a guide to life right here now when contact occurs.
Yep.
This is where we apply the benefit of origination. Mm-hmm.
And it is the Dhamma. You know?
It is the Dhamma in its essence. He awakened to it. Going through the Nagara Sutta is really very helpful to see how dependent origination originated.
Yes.
How he got those links, he found the links, and he started hooking them together and realized that this is how we mess ourselves up.
Yeah.
And with his incredible concentration and really brilliant intelligence, he then said, oh, well, if that's the case, then this is what we can do about it.
Yeah. Through that direct understanding.
It's direct understanding.
Yeah.
And it's...
And that's why he taught his Dhamma, because his Dhamma has us do exactly the same thing he did. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
So thank you for running us through there again. Every time we run through this, it becomes a bit more practical.
Yeah.
It becomes a tool instead of just a nice bit of theory that sadly everybody else has just thrown by the wayside and changed. And it's just a tool that brings incredible clarity to life.
Yeah. Thank you, Ram. And I mean, in it, when you understand what is taught in dependent origination, in order to create something different, you have to change this, because this is so fundamental. And I will take one exception to all of you. No, just kidding. That it's hard to understand from the point of view of right view. It's very difficult to understand from the point of view of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. In other words, first we have to understand the overarching context. But even then, I think if a layperson who had really no interest in developing dependent origination, if they read the Paticca-samuppada Sutta, and without any personalization, it would be obvious what it's saying, because it is very simple. And in a step-by-step way, it takes us from not knowing the cause of suffering to showing us clearly what it is. But each and every step is contradicted by our conditioned mind, and that's where what we come up against. We're coming up, when we read and try to integrate dependent origination, we're facing directly our ignorance, and that's what makes it seem so thick and heavy, because it is the essence of it. Mm-hmm. And like Ram just said, and it usually doesn't yield to a full frontal attack, meaning, oh, I got to get dependent origination today. The understanding of dependent origination is developed first by intellectually understanding what it says, and then applying it through the other suttas to how to get to the root of ignorance. In other words, the Eightfold Path is the resolution to dependent origination. It explains it. And as we develop that refined mindfulness that allows us to hold in mind the Eightfold Path, then dependent origination becomes apparent. And that's really how it works, rather than a full frontal intellectual assault. So thank you, Ram. Kate, how are you? Are you cold, Kate? We can...
No, it's fine. Okay. I get cold very easily, so.
Well, if you
ever... I always take care of myself so that everybody else is okay too.
Okay, but we can. If anybody gets too cold, we turn it off.
It's okay for me. I lost my job this week, and am so at peace. I was shocked. I mean, it was immediate that, you know, I'm listening to my boss on the phone going through the script that he and I have done to other people, and I said, he's firing me. And then as soon as I hung up the phone, I go, yes. And I didn't realize how much stress this job had, you know. I became involved with all of this stress, and it's so habituated that in the morning, before I even open my eyes, the habit of stress is, oh, I got to remember to do this. And what about this client? And what about that appointment? And blah, blah, blah. And then I go, oh, I'm retired. All this shit is somebody else's problem. And
great attitude.
My immediate reaction was, all right, now what? In a really joyful kind of way. Now what is the opportunity now that this heavy blockage is removed? So I've decided not to do anything until my surgery the 29th of July. And then I'll go through a recovery process, and then I'll do something or not. I don't know. I'm relieved, I'm excited, and I'm very much at peace.
Isn't that everything?
Yeah.
You said something so interesting and profound, Kate. You said that you get so involved in your stress and suffering.
Yeah.
Another way that the Buddha says that is we join compulsively, addictively with our suffering. Mm-hmm. We become it and we identify by it. Another way of saying that is we become entangled in the world. It means the same thing. And you explain beautifully how we get out of it. To a calm and peaceful mind.
Right.
And even something as potentially stressful, I mean, people would, you know, one of the worst things people would tend to hear is you lost your job.
Mm.
But even then, we're able to maintain a calm and peaceful mind. It's just remarkable. And thank you for sharing that with us, too. Kevin, how are you?
Good, very well done. Thank you. Thank you for that very clear talk on origination. I think it just, it was like straight through to everyone who heard it, and you can hear that. I feel like you gave a Dhamma talk, and then I think I've just heard seven or ten more Dhamma talks.
Yes.
I lost count. And it just, it's amazing to me. And, you know, I was just thinking, it's a weird coincidence, it's Independence Day today, and we're talking about dependent origination.
Yeah, well, that's
but
not
I think this independence is really, it's freedom, and it's freedom from craving.
Yes.
And if we know the Dhamma and the Four Noble Truths, then it gives us this freedom, it gives us this unburdening. And I could hear it so much in what everyone is saying. It's a beautiful thing. And I hope we can all continue. You know, it's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I think we're going to continue. And that's the thing that brings the most meaning to my life. You know, that when I hearing the everybody in the Sangha teaching the Dhamma, I mean, I said, this is what a Sangha should be like. I mean, you're lucky you have such a brilliant and effective teacher. I do think I'm a pretty good teacher, but that's because of your learning. You know, you've actually learned the Dhamma, all of you. And it is remarkable. You're all teachers to me, and we're teachers of each other. That's what the Buddha told his cousin Ananda. The Sangha is the most important aspect of the Dhamma, because it's not just a teacher, and it's not really just the Dhamma. It's the interaction of the Sangha talking about how this works from a personal experiential way. That's how, that's it. That's Dhamma practice. So, when the Buddha gave the Anapanasati Sutta, talking about how unique it is in the world for people to actually practice the Dhamma, he's referring to something we're doing today, 2,600 years later. In other words, during the Buddha's time, it was just as rare and unique to actually practice the Dhamma as it is today. But when you do, you have the benefits of it. Thank you, Kevin. Good morning, David.
You mentioned joining with. I don't know if that's entirely accurate, because that internal dialogue is always going on. That internal dialogue of convincing yourself, defending, lashing out, that internal dialogue that is always with you at the point of contact. And that's really where wrong view is.
Yeah.
And at the point of contact, our practice resides. And you develop mindfulness so you can understand that voice, that internal dialogue that is self. And then you learn that that's not what you are. It's a falsehood that you're fed continually. And your practice starts letting you have that ease and that space so you can understand it. And that's where, at the feeling it's not painful or pleasurable, it's more at ease, it's that equanimity that you're maybe not thought you needed, but that's really what you're developing.
Yes.
So even though dependent origination is a lot to intellectually understand, it's really just right there.
Yes.
Because everything before it and everything after it is all affected at point of contact and feeling. And I think that's what we do here every week, and every day that you sit and you interrupt that inner voice.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you for that beautiful explanation of it. It is at, during jhana meditation, at the point of contact, that we interrupt that inner dialogue, what Mary called the story. And it is maintaining that inner dialogue, maintaining our story that we've been telling ourselves, and hoping that the world doesn't discover the story that creates all the stress in our lives. And when we let go of the story, another way of saying the story or the inner dialogue is fabrication. From ignorance as a requisite condition comes the story. And so how long am I going to maintain the story? How long am I going to maintain this inner dialogue that I know has been causing so much stress and confusion and suffering for myself? Well, that inner dialogue, I started recognizing it around the age of 10 or 11 or 12. That's when a human mind starts becoming most self-reflective, towards the end of those early years, 8, 9, 10, 11. We start gaining a sense of self. Well, that was when I started getting even more confused, because I was now falling into this self that had no reference in reality. But we all do that. I wasn't a victim. I was simply a human being. And as David explained, it's then just a process of recognizing and interrupting the process, which is what the Eightfold Path brings us. Again, I say this every week, I think, now, and for a long time, but what a remarkable class. Okay, thank you all. Happy Independence Day. You notice the email, Independence on the Dhamma. I thought that was rather cute of me to say it that way. And we'll have a wonderful holiday. Everybody states, yes, please.
Can I just add something?
Absolutely.
If I may. Julia, I love what you said about the first part, those first steps of dependent or links with dependent origination. They seem to
Thank you.
Like those are the five aggregates that happen instantaneously.
Yep.
Within that process of becoming, and what David said too, you know, that's the struggle. you know, that recognition, it's very frustrating for someone like, I can only speak for myself, because I think it's more than a recognition, John, and this is something, you know, as I go through the Dhamma, my Dhamma practice, hopefully I can reconcile. I don't know if recognition is enough for my process. I need reconciliation. I don't know why, but I seem to, because like my metaphor, that leak keeps springing up.
Yeah.
And so this is dependent origination. We could just talk about it for like 20 more classes if you want to.
Well, we're going to. Next Tuesday's class is also
anyway,
on this.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Just wanted to add that.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim. All right. Happy holidays, everyone. Stay safe. But go enjoy some fireworks somewhere. You know, I was just thinking about that. I know it's going to be hard, but I never was a real big fireworks fan. But when they said you can't go anymore, I'm thinking, well, I went back to when we used to go as a family to Summit. They were the big ones, and then there was a big celebration in Berkeley Heights. They were known as one of the best fireworks in the world for many years, right there at Little Berkeley Heights. So it was a big deal, and. You know, if you have to do it on online or something, I guess, but it's not the same. So.
Yeah.
Enjoy the holiday, and not to get into any political debate, and it has nothing to do with it. The Buddha's Dhamma teaches true independence, and that's all that I wanted to kind of say on Independence Day. If we want true freedom and a way of living in the world that's peaceful, doesn't harm anyone or ourselves, it's through the Dhamma. You know, this is how we establish true independence. But, okay, that's my speech for today.
Beautifully said, John. Beautifully said.
Thank you. We'll finish with metta. This is always perfect, but it's so... The metta sutta is always right, but it's even more right, if I can say it that way, today. So gently close your eyes, gently close your mouths, and just take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.